What does the goddamn line say, Tony?
Please do not use gendered language.
Then what? I'll be arrested, put in airport jail.
Well, you're going completely sideways, man.
It's a big club, and you ain't in it.
How dare you?
Mr. Speaker, the President of the United States.
I'm Chris Hansen with Dave on NBC.
Jack Mary's Tack Theratrix.
I am Spartacus.
Steve Jackson, Sacramento, he, him.
Steven Seagal.
Sex offender guy.
I'm Keith Morris.
This is Muammar Gaddafi.
I'm Rick James, bitch.
Sorting through the lies.
The hijacker's passport was found blocks from the World Trade Center crash site, if you can believe that.
We cannot track $2.3 trillion in transactions.
And uncovering the centuries-long plan for world domination.
Learning about Cuba, having some food.
Let's talk about Chinese people.
Have you ever been in a Turkish prison?
I have a Fredita!
Swangles in Fort Lauderdale.
I have sent six of my Libyan missiles to blow up the Sears hardware department.
Nothing could be more fun than jumping off a cliff with two German bisexuals.
Oh, you English are so superior.
Thank you, comrade.
And now, macroaggressions.
That's what assholes call it.
With your host.
Buddy, I don't know who you are, but you're about to get chlamydia.
Charlie Robinson.
Hey, Whitey, where's your hat?
You want to drop the blame on Charlie and say it's all Charlie's fault.
He was a retard.
I get some goddamn diuretic.
Welcome to Macroaggressions. I'm your host, Charlie Robinson. If you're watching us on Iconic or you're listening wherever podcasts are served, we certainly do appreciate your support. Take this show and share it with everybody that you can. We're not going to get any help from the algorithms, of course. And we can't do this show without the amazing support of our sponsors. Honey Colony is fantastic. We've had Miriam Hanan, the founder of it, on. She's the director of Vanishing of the Bees. Go check out Honey Colony for, I don't know, for holiday gifts. They've got all kinds of things. If there's somebody in your life, you've bought them repeat presents over the years and they're catching on to your scam, you might want to mix it up a little bit. So check out Honey Colony. Use the promo code MACRO. You can get bee-related goods. You can get anti-aging creams, facial care, body care, home and garden, immunity boosting things, all kinds. Just check it out. Just take a look. There's stuff for men and women on there. Honeycolony.com. Use the promo code MACRO. Save yourself some money and support a small business while you're at it. Well, I'll tell you what. I'm about to do an interview so nice, we had to record it twice with my man Jimmy Jean. We did this interview last week, and let me tell you, you guys missed a barn burner, but the volume and the microphones and the settings on, probably on my end, for God's sake, I'm retarded when it comes to technology, was all off. So we had to record it again. So we've got Jimmy Jean here. He's nice enough to give us his time again. Jimmy, what's cracking? What's happening in this world these days? Tail end 2020 insanity fest.
Well, man, all I know is, you know, that last conversation we had, I mean, we're not scripted, you know, so it's a complete, it's like a jazz session when you and I get together. We got different instruments we're bringing, you know, and we're playing freeform jazz. And so we've been pretty hard to recreate the vibe and the conversation that we had last time. And, you know, a lot of stuff's transpired since then. And, you know, apparently, the powers that be have chosen to award the role of president to Joe Biden. And apparently he will be the script reader for the next 4 years after January 20th. Of course, the election hasn't been fully certified until, I don't know, January 6th or whatever. So I haven't been really going on at my way to start pulling out my baseball bat and start going and tearing, ripping and tearing. Cause I've been staying, you know, relatively silent and not trying to, you know, make a big deal about the alternative media deciding that they were going to jump into the left-right paradigm game again. and follow the talking points coming out of Austin, Texas, you know, and fully getting behind and supporting a president the way they have, to the point where we've been socially engineered by the, you know, behavior modification complex into a Trump fest for the last 4 years, 24 hours a day. What's Trump doing? What did Trump tweet? What does Trump think? Well, how did Trump get screwed? Where's Trump getting, you know, Trump's in court. Oh, there's an impeachment going on. What's going on with Trump? Trump, 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 Trump.
Yeah.
And now where are we? Well, you know, we're sitting here and nothing got done. Nothing transpired. No one got, you know, he didn't build the wall. He didn't lock her up, and he didn't do most of what he said he was going to do, but it's not his fault. His hands were tied by the global elites while he was single-handedly trying to save the world, Charlie. He was just trying to save humanity. He was humanity's last hope, Charlie. And now it's all gone.
It's all gone.
Biden's going to take office. And what's going to happen, man? It's going to be 4 years of some guy named Biden. Okay. And then it's going to be 4 years of somebody else and 4 years of somebody. Or maybe there'll be 8 years. I mean, who knows? You know, how long you want to stay into the psychosis is the issue. You know, meanwhile, back at the ranch, states are getting closed down. Vaccines are being rolled out. The ex-president of Pfizer sold half his stock before the thing came out. An ex-vice president from Pfizer said the pandemic's been long over. There's no even need for the vaccine. These don't sound like two individuals that were set to make a lot of money off this, you know, miracle vaccination that's coming down the pike. They sound like a couple of guys trying to CYA before the S hits the F.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying, Charlie?
I know what you're saying. Yeah. I mean, I can't picture 4 years of Biden. What a snooze fest that will be. You know, I mean, as far as just his personality, and you can already see glimpses of what he's going to be. They, you know, a lot of people said Donald Trump is a jerk, and he is. He's a jerky guy, but did you see that call, that video call that Biden did with all the BLM people? Man, he's such a dick to them. And but to be fair, I have no respect for BLM. BLM, the corporate, you know, whatever that is. I support the black community. Don't get me wrong. Those are two very distinct things. But BLM getting on this call telling Biden, you know, we got to do this. And he just snaps on him. Yeah, nobody's done it better than me. Nobody's talked about this stuff like me. I'm the only one that was at Charlottesville. I was the only one talking about Charlottesville. You're like, what the fuck are you even talking about? You mean besides everyone in the world that was talking about it, you're the only one? He's a pathological liar. And look, to be fair, I'm not saying Donald Trump isn't either. This is not some sort of like zero sum game where, like, if I say something negative about Biden, it automatically means I'm saying something positive about Trump. I don't like either one of them. But Joe Biden is a pathological liar. He's been a liar his entire career. There's videos of it. There's like news or reports about it where he's, you know, said, I finished the top of my class. I graduated with two degrees and I had full ride scholarship. And it's like, well, it turned out that he had none of those things because he's a liar and he constantly lies. And guess what? BLM, you guys should have got it in writing. You guys should have got it in writing before you supported his ass. You should have said, what are you going to do for us?
They don't need to get it in writing because they got over 10 billion with a B, dollars in donations since the beginning of all of this. So they're a country unto themselves, man, at this point. I mean, what can't you do with $1 billion? Is there anything I couldn't do? If I was an evil character in a movie and I had $1 billion, what could I do? What havoc could I wreak? I could wreak plenty of havoc with $1 billion because everybody wants a chunk of cheese, man.
Yeah.
And that's the whole problem with the system, man, is people just need to come to the terms of the, you know, get real about it and get real and understand that everything above us is corrupt.
Yeah.
if there's somebody in a position of power, it's corrupt, man. And here's the thing. I mean, we talked a little bit about it. You know, I'm into technology, and you know, I've been in technology my whole life. You know, and we could be moving into a really, really fantastic future. There's a fantastic future awaiting us, you know, and, you know, getting from there, getting to there has always been a big problem. Anytime there's any sort of leap forward, you know, as far as our, you know, current modern type civilization, there has to be a destruction in order that accompanies the leap forward. So you have to tear all the other stuff apart and then come back in and build it back up. Okay. Well, so the problem with moving into the future is that we're stuck in the old paradigm, the old profit scheme based in oil. And so to move from that oil onto whatever else it's going to be is going to cause everything that has to do with oil, which people don't realize that just about everything we have is based in oil. Yeah. Plastic, and there's nothing you can name almost that doesn't have some sort of an oil base to it. Yeah. And so those people got to be prepared to lose everything to move into this new future. And that's the issue, is the people that have the money don't want to lose everything. And so they're holding on to the past, and they're holding humanity back from the potential of, you know, if you got something wrong, you just go down and lay in a box and have them, you know, 3D print you up a new kidney or whatever. I mean, you know, it's just, you know, it's a terrible situation that we find ourselves in. And, you know, unfortunately, you know, inside the filter bubble known as the United States of America, I mean, we are all being forced into a situation to go against our brothers and our sisters and our uncles and our moms, and everybody's a big, you know, blood guzzling Satanist that voted for Biden.
Right.
When the reality of the situation is, the only people that believe that are a super small minority of people in the alternative media and whoever may listen, maybe in the millions. But there's billions.
Yeah.
The minority of people that have this kind of a viewpoint over the reality that we live in is really, really small. Really small.
Yeah. Well, I remember another great leap that was proposed. That was Mao. And in order for him to put his great leap forward, it cost the lives of 70 million, 73 million from some accounts, of his own people. I wonder if for this new great leap into this fourth industrial revolution, this great reset, if they plan something similar. Not everybody's moving to the next phase of this game, you know what I mean? They have plans for those that are the non-believers. They have plans for us that are that aren't getting along and going along with the program. And I think that those plans may include removing us from this planet. It's been done before by psychotic regimes that have visions of you know, delusions of grandeur of them running the whole world. We saw that in China. We saw that, you know, in Europe in the 40s. And now we see it here. Now, the difference has been that back when Mao was running things in China and when Hitler and Stalin were tearing up Europe, they didn't have the technological capacity to rule the entire world. But these days, with the introduction of this technology that we have and the globalization concept, they're actually in a position where if ever there was a time to rule the world, it's now. They can actually do it. You get Brzezinski talking about these things, about how it used to be easier to control a million people than to kill them. Now it's easier to kill them. And my fear is that the sales pitch for this great reset, this transformation of society, is just that, just a sales pitch. In actuality, it will be this dystopian future, and we'll still be arguing about whether Trump got screwed on his election or not as we're being marched into the FEMA camps for re-education. You know what I mean?
Well, I mean, that's the thing. I mean, while this whole thing's been going on, I mean, it's Operation Warp Speed, and everybody's being moved into position to, I heard one guy say, well, I stick needles in arms. That's what I do. We put needles in arms, so we're ready to start anytime it's available or whatever. So, you know, setting up places, you know, bringing them in, you know, bringing in the vaccinations and all that. I mean, this is all moving forward. It wouldn't have mattered who was in there. It's not like if Hillary would have won, this wouldn't have happened. You know, it might look a lot different. Who knows how it might look? I don't know. I seen the dude sign America off for $6 trillion, man, with a vengeance. When he hit that paper with that pen, when Trump signed that, and he tried to hand out pens to people behind him, you know, that because they were there to witness the moment. It was right. Like they were almost really reluctant to even take it. It was just the way he leaned into it. I mean, he signed stuff for a living. That's what he does, man. But it was for that $6 trillion, the way he leaned into it, it was almost like he was signing off America. Like it was bankrupt, man. We needed $6 trillion. They take that $6 trillion and reinject it back into the economy. All these elitists made money on the way down because they knew it was going to go. They made money on the way down. They got all this $6 trillion worth of, you know, free money and then rode it all the way back up.
Yeah.
Made money all the way down, all the way back up. Meanwhile, back at the ranch, unemployment's going to run out. Guess when? Just right around Christmas. No more unemployment. No more no more rent and eviction protection. People don't have jobs. People aren't going back to those jobs, those cubicle jobs, that those cubicle farms. Those they're not going back, man.
No.
And the thing is that I got a friend that, you know, is a technical writer, and right now he's writing some stuff that has to do with the mortgage industry. It's basically going to eliminate people.
Whoa.
Loans, everything, the whole nine, it's all going to be done. And so the thing is where are the people going to go? What are they going to do?
Right.
What are they going to do? Right. So the thing is, for the immediate future, what are people going to do? Well, they're toying with the idea of universal income,
mm-hmm.
right? Because there needs to be some sort of a basic starting point for people who are not going to be able to get back in the system. People are going to have to get retrained somehow. The problem is, the thing is like people are saying it's a communist revolution and all this. Listen, in order for there to be this communist revolution, there has to be workers.
Mm-hmm.
There's no workers anymore, man.
Communist robots.
Right. There's no unions. There's no anything. And if you got a job, you're just lucky you have it. You're not like getting together with your comrades in there trying to hit the boss up. Hey, man, cost of living's gone up 50% in my area. It's time we hit the boss up for like $5 raise, man. When was the last time you got a real? I got 20 cents, you know, a couple years ago. You know, that's the whole thing people don't realize. You know, you have all these people on the right that hate the unions, and half of them are making money because of the unions. The only reason you got an 8-hour work day is because some kids were working 16 hours a day, and then they made unions and they got rid of child labor. You know, so the thing is like there's this weird dichotomy where they've actually brainwashed people into thinking that having collective bargaining for yourself to make sure you have enough money to make it at the end of the week and all you got to do is work 40 hours, right? That's supposed to be the dream, right?
Mm-hmm.
You've got a family, Charlie. I mean, you should be able to only have to work 8 hours a day and 40 hours a week, and the rest of your family has the could stay home because you're making enough money that you're going to invest 8 hours of your life energy into something. In return, they're going to give you enough money at the end of that week for you to take care of business, you know? Mm-hmm. Go down to the carnival, you know, have a hot dog. You know what I'm saying? Go on vacation. Do something. That's what America used to be. That's what America people used to be fighting for, was that. But now we're fighting against each other for the opportunity to keep our shitty $10 an hour slave jobs.
Yeah.
So other people don't get universal income and so have socialized medicine. I mean, we're ready to break out the AK-47s and go to war with grandma down the street because she voted for Biden.
Yeah.
I mean, how many times has somebody like Biden, I mean, well, you know, Obama for eight years, you know. You know what's so funny about this too? Is it's the hypocrisy of it all. It's like, it's bad when the election gets stolen, only if your person loses. Like, right. It wasn't that bad when Bush stole it away from Gore. You know, it wasn't that bad when Bush stole it away from Kerry. It wasn't that bad. Right? It wasn't that bad when Biden Obama stole it away from old John. What's his nuts?
John McCain.
Hate that guy. Fuck, he's a traitor. Yeah. So, I mean, the thing is like, what's going on is there's this weird thing that's happened. In other words, if you're a person on the left and you got your white hat on, okay, but everybody else sees a black hat. You think you're wearing a white hat, but everybody sees you wearing a black hat. And it's the same thing with the other side. They think they're wearing a white hat too, but when you see them, they got a black hat on.
Yep.
And so there's no way to know who the enemy is in this so-called war that we're about to get into. Because I sat here the other night and watched 4 hours of the Proud Boys broadcasting the protest. This guy was following around. And I got to say, Charlie, this is really a slice of humanity. And although I'm a conservative person, although I would fight for my freedom, I would never align myself with the fools that I saw out in that street. And there was no difference between those people out there and the other people on the other side. The only thing that was different was what they were yelling and screaming about. That's it. I could be in the Antifa crowd right now with a black scarf over my face, and 15 minutes later, I could have a MAGA hat on and be over in the other march. Okay, so that's just the fun of it. But let's say it's a real war. Who are you standing next to in your little protest there, Charlie? Who's that guy standing next to you? Is that one of your guys, or is he just going to jump up in a minute and stab you in the face? I literally saw somebody get stabbed on that video.
Yeah.
And then Alex Jones appeared. Somehow he just all of a sudden just appeared out of this in this doorway with this bullhorn, and he just started bullhorning it, you know. And I'm sitting there at the time and I'm thinking to myself, did he like talk to the dudes? Because they were all marching around trying to find Antifa, trying to find a way to get to them, and the police kept herding them off in different directions. And as I'm wondering, how the hell did they end up in front of Alex Jones's hotel? Where he comes out, starts yelling and screaming. It looked like some kind of a meeting that you read about, you know, back in the old days or something. It was really kind of crazy.
I think he glows. He comes out and he just glows and he just gives off heat, and everybody just kind of find like a bug to a flame. They go, I feel like Alex is down that road somewhere. Let's go get him. And then he's bullhorning. The globalists are going to kill us all. You know, they're trying to inject our kids. And look, I watched the Antifa nonsense for 6 months this year, you know, the stuff they were doing, the limp-wristed throwing of Molotov cocktails, you know, the inability to break windows with rocks because they can't get them going fast enough, you know, just the embarrassment of their rioting skills. And there was part of me that actually was thinking, okay, I actually kind of support the alternative, not Proud Boys necessarily or Boogaloo Boys or whatever the term is. But there was a part of me that wanted the real protesters, like the real hardcore guys, to show up on the scene and kick the shit out of Antifa and give them a taste of their own medicine, because nobody was standing up to them. They were doing these things. They were being ridiculous. And then you see the mugshot compilations, you know, where there's 16 of them there, and you're like, holy shit, look at this batch of weirdos and mutants and meth heads and tweakers. And, you know, I mean, it looked like all the people that didn't get picked for the kickball team were all out there protesting that day. And it was an embarrassment to protesters. I mean, the French should come slap these guys around a little bit, show them how to really protest. But it's so fake, you know? If you sat any of these guys down and had a 10-minute conversation with them about what they believe, you'd have them, you know, unsure of themselves almost instantly. They can't make heads or tails of what they're even fighting for. You're going to start up a fucking an autonomous zone, and then you're going to grow vegetables on
discarded pizza boxes with potting soil. And I mean, frankly, it was the greatest television I've ever seen, but it was also embarrassing. And, you know, I'm just thinking, God, I wonder if the rest of the world's watching this. They're going, America is so good at so many things, just sucks at rioting, though. You know, they just can't. But what are we going to do? Are we going to fight each other? I mean, look, I think that half these Antifa guys need to be slapped and wedgied and stuffed in their locker. What are we going to do? Or should we at least acknowledge that there's a much bigger problem here? And it's not Antifa and it's not Proud Boys. It's the people above them that are manipulating them, that are putting them in a position to fight. You're going to fight to defend Donald Trump? Honestly, you're going to fight to defend Donald Trump, a guy that has no fucking soul, who has no, he doesn't give a flying fuck about you at all. I promise you that. He doesn't care. He cares about winning these battles with politicians and people like that. But you, the people, he doesn't care. And Biden either. They only care about you to the extent that they have to in order so that you will allow them to do the things that they need to do. But I feel like that it's to try and have a discussion or try to educate these people is pointless. It's what am I going to do? Am I going to go lecture the Antifa guys and tell them that they're all being controlled? Part of me wants them to just figure it out on their own and just be totally disappointed. Oh my God, we got played. So where do we go from here? Is this the precursor to the real civil unrest? Or is this the warm up? Is this spring training for all that? Or are we done with it?
No, I don't think we're done with it. It hasn't even started yet. I see. So the thing, only reason that there's going to be a delay is because if Biden's getting in, if they would have announced yesterday that Trump was the winner, this place would already be burning down.
Yeah.
I mean, so there's no question about that. But I do think that, you know, I mean, Antifa still hasn't been labeled a terrorist group in the United States, but white conservative Christian militias has been named by the Department of Defense as the number one threat. So, you know, all the pieces are in place. If anything happens, any extremist type activity happens, it's going to get blamed on the white conservative Christian militias. They're going to go after the guns. And then that's when these organized groups are going to come out. See, the thing is what people don't realize, it's not like a monolith, okay? It's not like the left is this monolith moving under one, you know, neither is the right. So there's 100 militia groups ready to go to war. None of them are talking to each other, and they don't have anything to do with anything else. And they're not part of the team necessarily in the sense, but they are in the sense that they're ready to go. Same thing over here. You know about Antifa and you know about BLM, but what about the groups you don't know about?
Right.
What about the street gangs that are so highly organized, computerized, and weaponized that they are literally armies in every city across the United States? They haven't seemed to be activated in any of the stuff that's been going on. I haven't seen any gang activity. I haven't seen no automatic weapons coming out, no machine guns. I mean, the amount of theft of guns in the city of Chicago, they literally, and you can check this out, they literally bring in railroad cars, leave the doors open with crates and crates of guns in the back. And people just roll up and steal it all. And nobody says anything or does anything. And, you know, you can imagine it's probably like that in a lot of places across America that people aren't aware of. But that's the only one I know of that you can check it out and have there be documented evidence of it. But other than that, I mean, so people are under the impression, you know, it's going to be some like Red Dawn movie or something, you know, I think like it's going to be just like you said, hey, it's good TV. You're right. It is. Right. Because guess what? When you're sitting there watching everybody else beating up and all, you're getting in fights and stuff, you don't go down there yourself. And the other thing is too, is you can tell, you'll be able to tell when they want, they don't show the right wing protesters unless they're showing them in a negative way.
Right.
So it's not like, oh, they're expressing their rights or whatever. Look at, they look at these extremists. you know, when the other side's protesting, it's like they glorify it on TV and make people feel like they want to be a part of it. But on the other side, it's just inflammatory. Don't you think everything is inflammatory, Charlie?
Yeah. Oh, for sure.
When you look at it, I mean, Trump, you know, Trump could have come out and said a lot of different things, you know. He could have come out and said, listen, if there's a problem with the election, it's everybody's problem. It's not just one side or the other. It's in the future. Our elections matter.
Yeah.
It's up to us as the American people to demand, you know, to this be investigated, but they're just going to let it go and just talk about it for 4 years. Like they talked about the birth certificate for 8 years.
Right.
You know, they're just going to sit here and talk about it and talk about it. And that's one of the things, you know, it's like everything is so hypocritical. All the stuff I'm hearing is the same stuff I heard from the left when Hillary lost. All the same dialogue, all the same, you know, complaining and all this and that. And, you know, and now the other side's going, suck it up, you know?
Right.
Take it like a man or whatever. People getting all inflamed. It's like we are putting to a point where we're ready to explode on each other for no reason. Even if you, I mean, I don't know. Have you been going out and interacting with people, Charlie? I mean, how are they where you are? Because around where I am, people are pissed.
Well, I haven't been interacting with too many people, to be honest with you. I haven't wanted to. And that, and maybe that's part of this, you know, a soft part of the psychological operation that it sort of deters you from wanting to have interpersonal communication with other human beings. I mean, as an example, you know, they have mask mandates in all the stores here in Colorado. They put a sign up there. I walk right in without one. I just do because I'm difficult, and it's my personal form of protest. But I don't want to interact with anybody in there, and I don't want anybody interacting with me because I know that I'm doing something that is against the, you know, I'm swimming upstream, so to speak. So if anyone wants to come interact with me, my default is that I'm assuming they're going to come up to me to tell me to put a mask on or give me some lecture or something like that. So I must have a look on my face that says, don't talk to me, because I don't want people to talk to me in those situations. I get done, you know, I go in the grocery store, I get the stuff I need, I get out of there and I leave. And so what it has done to me from a psychological standpoint has made me view other people not as bad, but I'm just really defensive in advance with no, without anybody, you know, coming up to me or anything. Just I get out of my car and I've got my proverbial shield up, and I'm just like, you know, don't even start with me today on this. So I'm in a frame of mind that is not very inviting for interpersonal communications with other people. That being said, this last weekend I met up with Steve Poikonen from Slow News Day, another Santa Cruz guy, and he was here in Boulder doing Assange rallies, you know, free Assange protests there. And I met up with him afterwards and his group of, there were seven, it was him and seven other or six other people. And we went and had brunch afterwards. We had to sit outside in like an enclosed igloo. It was 26 degrees and it was freezing ass cold. And we were the only ones there. But with that group of people there, nothing but love, nothing but respect, had a great conversation. We talked about a whole lot of things. That gave me a little bit of hope because I was interacting with people like the normal days. But you know, when I went to go into the bathroom inside the restaurant, the guy says, next time you come in here, make sure you put on your mask. And I just turned around and literally stopped and just turned my head and just stared him down like, go fuck yourself, buddy. And so I felt it, you know, my shield coming back up. So even when I was in a great situation where I was having a wonderful conversation with some very, you know, compassionate, smart, warm people, I still snapped, you know, it still hit me just like boom. And I felt myself go into that mode. Like, do you want to go, Mr. Waiter, like for that shitty comment? Like, you know, and I hate that. I don't want to be that. I don't want to have a short fuse with that. I mean, that guy's just doing his job. He's just doing what he's supposed to do. He doesn't, but I don't have time to have the conversation with him and explain how it's all bullshit. You know what I mean? And so, so I find myself in this really weird dilemma where I want to interact with the good people out there, but I don't want to spend 30 seconds with somebody that is, you know, wearing the mask and lecturing me and giving me a hard time about that. And I feel like that's the majority of people. That might just be in my head. But so it's done something to me psychologically. I think it's done that to a lot of people where it's put them in a position where they're having to make rash decisions on who they interact with, like instantly, and just, you know, I don't like being in that place, but I've been forced to be there by the media and by the government and by, you know, these ridiculous, constantly changing shutdown and opening orders and mask mandates and don't wear the mask, it doesn't work, and yes, you got to wear the mask or you're going to get $1,000 fine, I'm going to drag you to jail, and I'm going to shut down your gym, but Walmart can be open, or I'm going to tell you can't have outdoor dining at that restaurant, but a movie is filming across the street and they've opened up that whole area for outdoor. I mean, the hypocrisy and all that, is that not a destabilizing tactic that they are intentionally using on it? It has to be part of the plan, right? It has to be part of this psychological operation, is it not?
Yeah, there's no question. I mean, that's what I specialize in is psychological operations. I mean, that's pretty much what my show is about, you know, in a lot of different ways. I mean, I try to show it in as many ways as I can. I show it in its rudimentary form all the way up to where we are now. So the behavior modification complex, we have absolutely at this point, I would say, almost no free will at all if we're tied into the internet. The only way to escape it is to turn it off, because like when you turn it off, there's nothing going on outside your door at all. It's crickets, you know, and you know, so I just recently did some research on solitary confinement. So basically it was a dude, he wanted to go find out. So he went around and he spoke to people that had been in solitary confinement for years. And they set up a couple of tests, and then he himself was going to put himself into a situation for 72 hours where he was going to be in solitary confinement for 72 hours. So one of the interesting pieces about this particular thing I'm talking about is there was another part where before he went in, they brought in three people into a room. Two of them were actors and one of them was participating. So the other two people were setups to set this guy up. So they brought this disc into the room, set it on the table. And when you touch it, you got electrocuted, like really hard shock. And so the actor dude touches it and he goes, oh, you know, hey, you know, and then the girl touches it and then it's left to the last guy to touch it, right? The guy who's actually in the program. And so he touches it and then they come around and interview each one. And he says in this interview portion, they said, well, hey, would you touch it again? And he says, no, I'd never touch that again. Why would I touch that? It's awful. Okay. So now they take the guy and they put this guy in another room by himself. There's nothing in there. He's waiting for somebody to come in. He doesn't know when they're going to come. And he's in the room waiting. He doesn't go. And the thing that's in the room is that shocking disc, the disc that shocks you. It's on the table next to him. He cannot stand to be bored. Okay. And that's the whole thing. He would rather touch that thing and get electrocuted because he cannot stand sitting in that room waiting, not knowing. He gets bored after like 3 minutes and starts touching the thing and goes and touches it more than once. So it shows that people would be willing to get a negative stimuli just to have anything. They'd rather have a negative experience than not have any experience at all and be bored. So that ties into what we're talking about right now and about the way that we're all been isolated and we're almost in a sort of solitary confinement situation. So what was super interesting about the guy the thing that I noted to it, the thing that made me really take a look at it was, there came a point, he's in a white room, he's got lights on all the time. The lights never turn off, so you don't know if it's day or night, what time it is. So after a period of time, you lose track of it. And so you dream, and while you're sleeping, you're dreaming that you're in the room. You're dreaming about the room, you're dreaming you're in the room, and then you wake up and you're in the room. And there becomes this moment where you slip over, Charlie, and you get to this point where when you wake up, you're never really sure if you're dreaming or if it's real, because it's always the same. It never changes. So you dream about being in the room by yourself, and then you wake up and you're in the room by yourself. So you're constantly.
That's like a metaphor for something. I mean, that, what a trip.
And it reminds me of what you were just talking about there with your, you're sitting in the igloo with these people having this experience, you know, and then all of a sudden you walk out of there and you walk out of that dream world that you're in and get snapped back to reality by some asshole.
Yeah.
You know, and this is an important thing that's happening in our society, because what's going to happen, in my estimation, we will see in the near-term future, this refuser term will become something that will be attributed to somebody who doesn't believe in the medicine. They don't believe in the vaccinations. They don't want to take it. They don't want to wear a mask and this and that. And it'll make you, a refuser will be almost like a criminal. In other words, if you walk into a store in the future and you don't scan your phone in there and you don't do what you're supposed to do, and you come walking there with a mask, some dude's going to come up and go and taser you, throw you and tie wrap your hands and throw you outside in the back of a van. And they'll take you down to the camp with the rest of the refusers, because you're a danger to society in the future. In the future, the rules of engagement will be different. Because if you're not following the rules like everybody else, and you're walking around without a mask, well, isn't that to a law enforcement officer? That's a life threatener. You are threatening that person's life. Will they be able to shoot you dead? I mean, is it going to be, Charlie, is it going to be, hey, you can either have one in the arm or one in the head. It's up to you. Yeah. One in the arm, one in the head.
It'll be a psychological condition. The refuser syndrome or something like that, where you know, this is authority defiance. What was the new term they came up with? Something like that, where they try to paint you, you know, try and make it a psychological case. And of course, the basis of psychology is rooted in horseshit to begin with. But you can easily see that somebody that is a science denial, a mask denier, somebody that has authority issues, and they'll brand you, they'll talk to you about psychological problems that you have. This is a person that needs to be institutionalized for society's own good. The insanity right. of that.
Right. And then think about the whole operation that was put out there, the whole Q operation, and how that's being demonized. And so now when Trump doesn't get in and the whole Q narrative is proven to be a bunch of nothing, then they'll point it, because that'll make all the other stuff that was said, all the nasty pedophilia and all this stuff, they'll point to it, the whole thing, the anti-vaccinations, all that. They'll point to the whole thing and say, look at it. It was all fake. You know, these people are crazy. They thought Trump was this. Da, 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 da. They also believe this. And they also believe the vaccinations are bad. They went in Congress and said the Q followers were a threat to our way of life. Literally. So when Trump doesn't get in, can you imagine the number they're going to do on people that supported Q? And I mean, they're going to do a number on them, man. And they're going to say, you're crazy, man. You need to get help.
Yeah. You can see it. You can see them laying the groundwork for that, for sure. I love that. Look, I'm not on the Q team. Neither are you. But if we want to prioritize who's a threat to society, well, I mean, are we talking about Q? before Antifa. I mean, it's laughable, but a lot of people don't understand that. They don't see the hypocrisy in it. They see it as, oh yeah, these Q people, man, they're fucking crazy. I mean, they're believing all kinds of stuff. They're trusting the plan. They're waiting for rounding up the pedos and expanding Guantanamo Bay and all this. Look, all that stuff sounds great. I want them to expand Guantanamo Bay to put all the pedophile guys in there and everything. Am I holding my breath? No. And that was my feeling with the Q stuff from the beginning was I said, it all sounds good. It all sounds nice, but let's see it. You know, show me, homie. Show me that Guantanamo has been expanded. Show me that means that these guys are wearing boots to hide their ankle monitoring devices. Great story. Sounds interesting. I want that too. But in the absence of proof, I'm just going to be sitting here saying, you guys do kind of look unhinged until you show some actual proof of this. It takes time. They can't do all this. Okay, fine. I get it. You want to pull it up by the roots? It takes time. We got to get all these people out if we want these, you know, arrests to stick. We can't run it through the court system if you got a dirty, Department of Justice. I get all that. I hear you. But you had 4 years. What is it? I'll take care of this in my second term. Is it that bullshit line again? Is that what we're going to get? I think that the Q thing has been exposed as being a gigantic LARP. I think that the people that woke up because of Q, look, on the one hand, good thing you're waking up, but when you get immediately funneled into the Republican side of things, then you're not really awake. You just think you're awake. You're groggy. You're not actually awake, because if you were really awake, you would want nothing to do with those people. You would want nothing to do with the right. And you would understand that the right and the left is they're equally evil. They just have a different way of doing it, but they're not, you know, if you think that the Republican Party or Donald Trump is going to save you, oh my God, like, You can't possibly actually be awake if you have those thoughts. Those are not awakening thoughts. Those are sleepwalking thoughts. That's what you're doing when you think you're awake, but you're just sleepwalking around saying, trust the plan, wait for Q. You know, look, did you see this Q drop? Did you read that code? Did you read that? It says, he mentioned, it's like, you know, when tweakers take apart a radio, because they're so fucked up and they're take apart a radio, but they can't ever put it back together. That to me was Q. It was all these like guys that were like in the conspiracy world that I enjoy and appreciate, but they're like tweakers focusing on this, trying to take apart these codes and try and figure it all out and then try and put it back together. And it never fit. It never fit for me. And so it just seems like a colossal waste of time. And now what? Now what do we have? What's 4 years of Biden look like to you? If that's where we go, is it really Biden, or is he just an empty suit, an empty vessel that every sort of globalist maniac can pour their ideas into?
No, I mean, there's an agenda. It doesn't matter if Biden's in there. I mean, Trump is moving the agenda just as forward, probably more forward than any Democrat could ever move it. Mainly because most of the people that would oppose what the Democrats were doing were sleeping because they were waiting for the plan. And so they didn't do squat, and they didn't put anybody's feet to the fire. They kept waiting and waiting. Tomorrow never comes, ladies and gentlemen. I'll tell you that right now. Ain't going to be no tomorrows, man. If you got the goods, man, put them on the table, bro. You know, I could get if I got a FISA warrant, I'll get every electronic transaction that happened in America on the day of the election. And put that on the table as irrefutable forensic evidence that the election system is completely fraud, completely flawed. But that's not going to happen, because guess what? The rest of the world, the New World Order, uses this system to put their people in across the planet. They're not going to let little Donald Trump destroy everything. They're going to say, you go be quiet and start your news network and let your son run for president in 4 years. And that's the end of you. Just like Nixon, you know, he waved and said, I'm not a crook. If Trump's main problem right now is not whether or not he gets into office and being president, it's whether or not he gets in the office and stays out of prison. Because people are talking about going after him for some stuff that they can get him on it. So he's in a weird position because how does he pardon himself? You know, is he going to pull a Nixon and, you know, resign real quick right before the end so Pence can pardon him? I mean, you know, I don't know what's going to happen. You know, it's all up in the air, Charlie. But I want to point out, you brought up something earlier, and that is that, you know, how did they get us against each other? Like, when you think about it, on the face of it, we're against fascism. So we're not fascist. We don't want a fascist country, right? But somehow Antifa is the enemy. Like, because they're doing what they're doing, we can't get behind it for some reason. Because it's for some reason. But when you look on the walls in the halls of Congress, you see on the back of the wall two giant fasci. Okay, you look on your dime, on the back of your dime, what's that? It's a fasci. So we are a fascist country. So, I mean, the definition of fascism is corporatism, right? So where corporations and the government work hand in hand. Now, correct me if I'm wrong, but isn't this whole vaccine a fascist vaccine? It's a, you know what I mean?
Of course. I think that I've read that the definition of fascism is when the state and the corporations come together for the benefit of the state. And corporatism is when the state and the corporations come together for the benefit of corporations. And I feel like we have a blurring of both. Whatever it is, corporate fascism, maybe we just call it that, where it's benefiting both parties. It's benefiting the government. It's benefiting the large corporations, of course. And of course, what we've seen over the last year has been the systematic destruction of small and medium-sized businesses. And I think that most people that are paying attention would understand that that's not accidental, that that is part of the plan, that is part of this segmenting of society into the haves and have-nots. And you can destroy somebody's livelihood. You can destroy their life by destroying their business. You know, you can end their life in a figurative sense, and in some cases, in a real sense, by doing that. Has a psychological effect on the whole community. And then what happens? All these stores go out of business, and next thing you know, that retail, you see coming soon, you know, Baskin Robbins, local ice cream guy that's been there for 30 years, done. Coming soon, Ben and Jerry's, corporatism, corporate this, corporate that. Oh, that grocery store that you liked, gone. That shopping mall you used to go to, it turned into an Amazon distribution hub, you know, and that this is, and with the vaccine question, we just did a Union of the Unwanted show where we had on Dr. Brian Hooker and we had on Scott Atlas, I think was his name. Was it him? We had a bunch of people on and I don't think it was Scott Atlas. It was somebody else. But anyway, we were talking about the ins and outs of the vaccines and it is fascinating to me. I mean, it's frustrating, but it's also a fascinating case study. And you can bring up you can arm yourself with facts, not even opinions, just straight up facts, and get yourself into a conversation about the vaccine, the vaccine agenda, the vaccine, the push for this COVID vaccine, or push for all vaccines, really, but specifically this COVID one. And you get into a conversation with somebody and you present them with facts and they will turn away from them. They will not want to examine them. It's the strangest thing, because they would rather make a decision based on fear, you know, an emotional decision that's not even anchored in any sort of science. It's just fear, as opposed to facts and real science. You bring that, you present that to them in the most rational and calm way you can, not argumentative, not lecturing, not being a shithead about it, just presenting it to them. They want nothing to do with it. It's you know, the media, I say this all the time, but I feel like I can't say it enough. The media's role in 2020 in this coronavirus thing is they're co-conspirators. They're absolutely, like, it's a media virus. It's a media and government virus that has been manifest to become true. But like you said, stick your head out the window, crickets, man. I don't see any,
Where are all the dead bodies? Where's the need for the vaccination? Is everybody bad at math? Is everybody unable to calculate odds when you have a virus, a deadly virus with a 99.9% survival rate, or, you know, depending on your age category? It's like a nation or a world filled with people that are bad at statistics, bad at math, bad at calculating odds. You know, I'm going to take a vaccine that may or may not turn me into a fucking transistor radio for all I know, with all kinds of technology in it, to save me from something that I have a 99.9% chance of being saved by, just if I do nothing. I feel like part of me just is like, then take the vaccine. Dope. Go be the first in line, you big dummy. If you're unwilling to look at this information, it's like the vaccine situation has become like a litmus test to see who's paying attention or not.
Well, you can tell who's going to take the vaccine by who's wearing a mask.
Yeah.
So, I mean, you can see the majority of the people will. And so when you refuse, you're going to be a refuser. And that's the thing, is like, we have to come together and say no to that, but we won't, because the people want to be in the majority. Most people go the easiest way, man. Most people are not trailblazers, man. They're not going to go off the beaten track. They're going to stay on the beaten track just like everybody else and be good people, do their thing. And, you know, and if you're not doing what everybody else is doing, there's something wrong with you, man. And, you know, you need to be, somebody needs to do something about people like you, because, you know, you're jamming up the program. So, I mean, you know, hey, if the vaccine's all that safe, Charlie, well, let's start with every single military personnel, start with the generals, and see how they feel about having the whole military exposed to the vaccine. And then the answer will be no, because they can't afford to have everybody in the military die off. So, and especially the planners. So, I don't know what to think. I just think, you know, being a refuser is going to mean this dystopic future where you don't eat, you don't get your government cheese, you don't get anything without your proof. And, you know, it's not that they're going to say you have to do it, Charlie. You don't have to, you know. But, you know, if you want to exist, you know, outside of the under the bridge crowd, you know, working in, I mean, what is going to be the way to buy and sell? Because we'll have a digital currency once they use the operation here to move us into that currency, because money's so dirty, Charlie. You know that. You know how dirty money is.
It's the dirtiest, yeah. It's so dirty, we have to do away with cash and roll out this universal basic income that we've been plotting for years and years, but never had the right crisis. This, the Rahm Emanuel, never let a good crisis go to waste, man. All these people, all these psychos in government and public policy are sitting around thinking, how can I cram my dystopian, nightmarish idea that I've had, that everyone told me I was crazy for trying to introduce, that there'd be no support. How can I roll that out now, but with a COVID slant to it, where I get everybody extra freaked out and I say, well, you've got to do it because of COVID. So yeah, you want to ban cash for your digital currency that you can track everywhere. Well, what better way than to tell everyone that cash is dirty, literally dirty. It will disease you. Don't ask any questions about the Amazon box that just came your way. Don't ever ask questions about that. That box is fine. Your cash, though, very dirty. I mean, only drug dealers and money launderers and people plotting kidnapping schemes use cash. Everybody knows that. You know, I mean, it's this gaslighting of us, just the intentional dumbing down. And you know, I don't know. I don't expect everybody to have this figured out. I don't expect everybody to see the agendas like we do. We're sort of operating in a higher capacity. I don't mean that in like an arrogant sort of way. It's just that when you're into this stuff and when you read about it and you've watched it and you've lived it and you've written about it, and you in your show Into the Microcosm, fuck knows you've been down this path for years talking about this stuff. So when you see the agenda coming out in front of your face, it's clear as day. I don't expect everybody to figure that out. I don't expect everybody to know, you know, to recognize these signs when they see it. But I do I do hope that people will at least be willing to acknowledge and admit that maybe, just maybe, they've been duped by the mainstream media. They've been had. They've been had on a number of levels. They might have been had by Q, that whole thing. They might have been had by the media. They might have been had by Big Pharma. They might have. And that, as we know, is a very difficult thing for people to admit to. And it puts us in a situation where we've got a lot of people that are unwilling or unable psychologically to admit that they've been duped and to get off of that. So that it's that old thing. It's easier to convince somebody that, you know, to fool somebody than to convince them that they've been fooled. And we're in this situation where everybody's getting fooled and nobody is willing to acknowledge that they're in the process of being fooled by their media, by their government, because their default must be, this is such a grand conspiracy. How could everybody be in on it? How can the NFL be in on it? How can the NBA be in with Black Lives Matters and everything? It's got to be real, right? It's got to be real if all these people. And what they don't understand is that all it takes is a fake spark and outrage, and that spreads and everybody catches it. The NBA isn't putting Black Lives Matter out there because they actually give a fuck about Black Lives Mattering. They're doing it because it's a shakedown. It's an insurance policy on their league. They pay the token to the BLM to get them off their back and say, okay, we're on your side. Here's some money. See, we're on our side. Leave us alone. We want to operate. It's a shakedown operation, is it not?
It is, you know, part of the problem too is that the alternative media segment of the media, which is there's just media, man. There's no real separation between alternative media and media. It's just a title, but it's all still the same. It's not like you can trust what's in the alternative media. And so what happens is, if you're a consumer of the industrial truth complex information, you think that you know about this stuff, which you do. You are one of the minorities that knows about these things that people find out about that are common knowledge to the people whose groups they come from. But to the general public, they haven't been publicized, but it's general knowledge if you're in that business. And so when people in the alternative media show up with some document about something, or, you know, they found something from CIA.gov or whatever, like all of a sudden, you know, public documents from the CIA or, you know, that solidify whatever you're saying, all of a sudden that they're real. You know, you could trust the CIA when you go to CIA.gov because you're using their document, but the rest of the time you don't trust them. You know, and so the thing is, there's this sense of we know something that everybody else doesn't know. But guess what? Everybody else doesn't know. And you're in this filter bubble with a bunch of other people that think they know. And so that puts you in your own little category, because even though you think you know and you're above what you think you see, unless you can look at yourself and realize that you're not above, and because you can see it over there, you should realize that that means that you're in a category too over here. You just don't realize it.
Yep.
You're in this filter bubble, you know. And so the bottom line is, there's a wall that's built up around the alternative media. Most of what people take for common knowledge, or, you know, accusations made, never responded to, and in the court of the alternative media's opinion, people are this and they're that and da 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 da. They're drinking blood and they're ripping the face off of children and eating tacos, and, you know, I mean, none of this stuff has ever been proven. None of it's been brought to court. If there's evidence that exists, then it would have went to court and those people would be in jail, right? Right? No.
No.
So the thing is, has anybody out there wearing that mask ever even heard any of that stuff? No, they don't. So there's a super small minority of people that know this information and send it back and forth to each other and talk to each other about it. but we're not talking to the mainstream public. And I swear most of what you hear on a lot of these shows, if you were to go down to the local psychologist and tell them four or five of the main conspiracy theories that you think are real, you would be in an insane asylum in about 5 minutes.
Yep.
Because, I mean, that's the way things are set up. The mainstream doesn't recognize the alternative media information as anything but the tabloid that you buy when you're leaving the supermarket, the Weekly World News. Remember that?
Yep.
Those stories used to be so crazy. Yeah. Now there's a whole world that's developed that turns out that the Weekly World News was right all those years.
They leaked that out in Men in Black, right? Where they said that's where they used to go get all the good information. Well, speaking of good information, I know that people can get good information from your show. Why don't you tell everybody where they can find your how would we describe you? Anti-authoritarian, troublemaker, dude that's been doing this for a long, long time. Where can they find you?
I'm on Revolution Radio every Monday at 3 Pacific, Studio A, and Friday nights at 11 o'clock Pacific PM, Friday nights. And then, of course, we have our YouTube channel, Into the Microcosm with Jimmy Jean, and we're in the strike zone right now for the next week, and then we'll go back to our main channel because I got some strikes over there testing the algorithm, which I do mostly. Yeah, no, you're right. I have been doing this for a bit. And, you know, I'm to the point now where I'm super fed up with a lot of what's going on. You know I got into this for a certain reason. And it seems like a lot of the reasons that a lot of people have gotten into this in the first place, the reasons for doing it are slowly, you know, disappearing. You know, it's to the point now where, I mean, the waters have been so muddied with so much disinformation in along with, you know, the good information that at this point, you know, trying to be able to, I describe it as like a whiteout, man. It's like a whiteout at this point. Nobody knows what's going to happen. Nobody knows what the future holds. Everybody's speculating about what they think is going to happen, most of which never happens. So I don't know, man. I don't know what the future holds for myself and the alternative media as a whole. I mean, I see a lot of people are leaving. I see a lot less involvement from a lot of the old timers. I see people just getting fed up, Charlie. You know, seems like the people are beating their heads against the wall. You know, and go ahead. I'm sorry.
I can certainly understand that. You feel like you're. You know, you feel like you're trying to connect with people. You're trying to get your message out to people, and there's this brick wall of cognitive dissonance and ignorance and media programming and all of the confluence of all these certain things hitting, you know, impacting a person's brain. You try to have a conversation with them about something relatively like you don't even. You know, relatively harmless, you know, knowing in the back of your mind, like I can go super deep if I need to, but I'm going to start this relatively harm. And you run into a brick wall there. It's easy to get discouraged. I can totally understand why someone that's been doing this for a long, long time is throwing their hands up and going, what's the point? You know, what is the point with these people? If you're unwilling or unable to accept this information, if you're not even seeking it in the first place, then why bother? Why, you know, and it's a prioritization of time too. It's like, I only have so much energy and I only have so many hours in the day. You want me to waste my time trying to argue with some guy on Twitter about this? Or should I focus on getting the message out to those that are in a position that are willing and able to receive it?
Well, you know, we put everything we have into every show, man. I mean, we do a show, you know, and we put everything we have into it every time. You know, it's organic. You know, it happens once. It happened that night, and that's it. You know, and the thing is, you know, the thing that's just disturbing to me, man, just recently what's upsetting me, man, to be honest, is that the other night when I was broadcasting, I was on YouTube and I was broadcasting a guy who was broadcasting the protest. And that guy was broadcasting the guy who was broadcasting the protest. So I was like the third guy down the line. I was broadcasting something. Somebody else was broadcasting from somebody who was actually there. Mm-hmm. the guy whose stream I was broadcasting, he wasn't doing anything. And I mean, when I say he wasn't doing anything, I mean he wasn't doing anything except showing that he had 20,000 people on his channel. He was getting hundreds of dollars every 10 minutes in super chats. The other guy got 7,000 subscriptions in one night. I had 12 people on my channel. I was broadcasting the same thing that they were, the thing that people were looking for and they couldn't find. Mm-hmm. I never got one listener more than I had for the whole 3 hours that I was on there. That to me, brother, is statistically impossible. Other than my little screen was never up anywhere on YouTube to see that I was out there broadcasting. And that's what's pissing me off, is because I bust my ass to do these shows and I have no real way of even knowing how many people even see my show or if they're even getting messages that my show's even coming on. So, I mean, my stuff goes out over Revolution Radio. We go out over 30 different streaming services. I don't know how many people are out there listening. All I can really base it on is when I'm on YouTube.
Yeah.
And YouTube has not been very kind to me. I mean, I got to be honest. I've been dancing on the edge with YouTube ever since I've been on there. I've been in trouble the whole time.
Yeah.
Because of the stuff that I do, the stuff that I play on there. But, I'm starting to get discouraged, man. I'm starting to feel like, it's not that doing it for 20 people isn't good enough for me. It is. I don't do it any different for 20 people as I'm going to do it for 6 million people.
Right.
I got a screenshot right here. I got a screenshot of my channel. It says I got 6 million subscribers. Okay.
Where are they?
No, I'm just saying, my co-host has screenshot our, when he's gone onto the channel, he screenshotted it and what we watched it go up by millions, but it only shows me that I got 178 subscribers and 12 people watching my channel. So it's obviously, I don't have 6 million subscribers, but the thing is, man, at the point I'm having 12 people come to my channel, I might as well be throwing a dinner party, man.
Right. I'd be there for that dinner party. Shit would get wild. Damn, man. Well, hey, that's Jimmy Jean, everybody. He likes the good shit. Why don't you check out his stuff? Check out Into the Microcosm. Find him. Subscribe to his YouTube channel. All 6 million of you listening to this, subscribe to his YouTube channel. Thanks, Jimmy. You're the best, man.
Thank you for having me, man. I appreciate it.
Thanks, brother. All right. Hey, everybody, take a chance and share this episode, and let's see if we can defeat the algorithms. It's up to us. Thanks, everybody.